Information, please. Presented each week at this time by Canada Dry, famous the world over for its fine beverages. Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts and enjoy a glass of refreshing Canada Dry ginger ale. Every week at this time, Information, Please directs the toughest questions at the toughest experts we can secure. Here's how it goes. For every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $5. And if your question stumps our board of experts, you not only get $10 more, but in addition, you receive a complete 24-volume set of the current Encyclopedia Britannica. Mind you, this is only if your question stumps our board of experts. Our editorial staff may reword your question a trifle. Don't worry about it. Whenever there is a duplication of questions, Information Please uses the one that was received first. All questions become the property of Information Please and should be addressed to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City. And now may I present our Master of Ceremonies, Mr. Clifton Fadiman, literary critic of the New Yorker magazine. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, nobody works hard on this program because, as you know, it's completely unprepared and unrehearsed. The four experts who do not work hard tonight are first the eminent sports maestro, Mr. John Kieran, the verse writer and column conductor for the New York Post, Franklin P. Adams, Jan Struther, the author of the best-selling book, Mrs. Miniver, and the famous American novelist, Louis Bromfield, author of The Rains Came, Night in Bombay, and many other distinguished works of fiction. Now remember, listeners, for each question that's missed, Canada Dry rings up $10, and that's paid out to the sender, plus 24 volumes of the latest edition of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Now we'll start with a question so easy that I'm ashamed to direct it at these four distinguished intellects. This comes from Mrs. Watt Richardson of Reidsville, North Carolina, and will take you back to Mother Goose. What Mother Goose character did the following things? There are four of them. Get all four. What Mother Goose character jumped over the candlestick? Oh, that's so easy. Mr. Bromfield.
Jack.
Jack.
J.B. Nimble.
Middle initial B.
Jack B. Nimble.
Jack B. Nimble, the famous Nimble family, yes. His brother being named...
J.B. Quick.
That's right, Quick and Nimble, yeah. What Mother Goose character thought he was a good boy? Thought he was a good boy. Mr. Adams.
L.J. Horner.
L.J. Horner. How do you address these people when you write them, Mr. Adams?
L.J. Horner, Esquire.
Oh, yeah. What Mother Goose character loves plum cake and sugar candy? Loves plum cake and sugar candy. Ah, this has got them down. Mr. Kieran.
Handy Pandy Jack a Dandy. Love plum cake and sugar candy.
Yes, you are practically right. Handy Pandy is not right. Andy Spandy is right. Andy Spandy. I'll take Andy Spandy, Mr. Kieran. What Mother Goose character sat among the cinders? Sat among the cinders, Miss Struther.
Little Polly Flinders.
Yes, will you give us the next line?
Little Polly Flinders sat among the cinders, warming her pretty little toes.
Yes.
Her mother came and caught her and smacked her naughty daughter for spoiling her nice new clothes.
That's very nice. Thank you very much, Miss Struther. That was just to get them started. Now, the next question from H. Kelly of Indianapolis. Each of the following men, there are going to be four of them, came to an unhappy ending. Do you recall the circumstances in which each met his end? Get three out of four. The first is Ivar Kreuger, K-R-E-U-G-E-R, Mr. Bromfield.
Committed suicide in his flat in Paris.
Yes, so who was Ivar Kreuger?
He was a great Swedish swindler and capitalist who controlled the match industry.
Yes.
And who brought down in his fall a great many financial houses in Europe and
That's
America.
That's exactly right, Mr. Bromfield. Thank you. Now, the second would be Marinus van der Lubbe. Marinus van der Lubbe. Mr. Bromfield specializes in unhappy endings.
Van der Lubbe was the half-witted Dutch boy who was made the scapegoat in the trial for the burning of the Reichstag.
Yes, that's right.
And was beheaded by the Germans.
Yes.
Although he was so half-witted, he didn't know whether he'd burned the Reichstag or not.
Yes. That gives us two unhappy endings. The next is Jean-Louis Barthou. How did he meet his end? Under what circumstances? Barthou, B-A-R-T-H-O-U. Mr. Bromfield, you are ever reliable. Mr. Bromfield.
A morgue expert. No, Barthou was foreign minister of France, and he was shot at the same time Alexander of Serbia was assassinated in Marseille.
Gosh, you're marvelous at this sort of thing.
I would say I wouldn't have.
Very good. Maybe we can catch you on this one. Arthur Flegenheimer. Arthur Flegenheimer. Mr. Adams.
He was shot.
He was.
Otherwise known as Dutch Schultz.
Otherwise known as Dutch Schultz, or D. Schultz, as you would put it. Shot about when? And where, would you say?
About 12:30.
By gullies, I think you're right, Mr. Adams. It was 12:30. He was shot in a tavern in New Jersey, October 23rd, 1935. Gives us four unhappy endings out of four unhappy endings, and sends us on to a question coming from Annette Hardiman of Douglaston, Long Island. Quote four lines of poetry, Miss Struther and gentlemen, that mention four different kinds of tree. And you may not repeat the same tree. Mr. Kieran.
The moan of doves in immemorial elms and murmur of innumerable bees.
That's a beautiful line. It's from what?
Tennyson. Writer?
From Tennyson, yes. That gives us an elm tree. Miss Struther.
Hearts of oak are our ships, hearts of oak are our men.
Good. And the who wrote it? You don't know?
Isn't
I don't know either.
Terrible.
I don't know either. We're perfectly
I connect it with Dibdin, but, well, I think he wrote the tune.
I don't know. Mr. Kieran, would you know?
No, I don't know.
All right. That gives us hearts of oak. Mr. Brumfield.
Under the spreading chestnut tree.
Very good. Very good. We're very glad to accept that, Mr. Brumfield. That gives us three. Mr. Kieran?
Murmuring pines and the hemlocks, bearded with moss like Druids of Eld and so forth. Longfellow.
That gives
Evangeline.
Us four or five. That's right. There's a famous song that you like to sing, Mr. Adams. It has two trees in it. Sweet Adeline, for you I pine. It gives us seven. August Gold of Brooklyn, New York, sends this one in. Name three different species of animals which have taken their names from islands adjacent to the coast of the British Isles. And name the islands from which the name was taken. Miss Struther.
Manx cat.
Manx cats, yes. From the Isle of?
Man.
Of Man. Plural being?
Mangies, I should think.
I have no idea. What do they call inhabitants of the Isle of Man?
Manxmen.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Adams.
Shetland.
Shetland. From what island?
Shetland Island.
Neatly put. That gives us, gives us two. Mr. Kieran.
Jersey cows.
Jersey cows, yes. The Jersey Islands are to be found where?
In the English Channel.
Yes, part of the Channel Islands. Mr. Brownfield, do you have another in mind?
Guernsey cows.
Yes, that's right. That's all right. Mr. Adams often picks things up for Mr. Kieran that way. Miss Struther.
Skye terrier.
Oh, that's a very good one. Where does the...
In the Hebrides.
In the Hebrides. The is it part of a group of islands?
Yes, over the sea, too.
The Inner Hebrides, that's right. Well, we have at least four. D. Mitchell of Louisville, Kentucky, sends this one in. This will test your knowledge of the derivation of words, Miss Struther and gentlemen. From what languages are the following words derived? Get three out of four. Now, all of these words belong to the same category, one might say. The words are wine, whiskey, brandy, and gin. From what language is the word wine derived, Mr. Adams?
Latin.
Latin. And the Latin word would be what, would you say?
Venus.
Venum, yes. Whiskey, Mr. Brumfield.
I think that was Gaelic.
Yes, it is. Can you give us the Gaelic? How is your Gaelic this evening, Mr. Brumfield?
I have no knowledge.
U-S-Q-U-E-B-A-U-G-H.
That's very good. What a lot of vowels you can get in one word, Mr. Adams. Yes, what does it mean, Miss Struther?
It means the water with fire in it.
No, not quite.
Usque is water.
Yes, and bioch, or however that's pronounced. Mr. Kieran, do you know what that means?
No.
It means life. Water of life.
Very good name.
Eau de vie.
Yes, it's exactly the same. The spirit that giveth life. The word brandy would be derived from what language? Brandy? Of course, you rarely worry about where these things come from in the way of their derivations. Brandy, how about a guess, gentlemen?
French.
No.
Well, that's wrong, Mr. Adams.
Right. Sounds more like...
I think it's a made-up
German.
I beg pardon, Mr.
Sounds more Teutonic.
It does. It is a Teutonic language, and the language is Danish. It comes from a word brandewein, from branden, to burn, and wein, wine. It's a burnt wine. The German is brandwein, Mr. Brumfield, is it not?
Yeah.
Well, that gives us
a battle
wrong.
Like that.
That's true.
Battle of brandewein.
Sure.
It probably got its name. It is a Pennsylvania Dutch country. That's
it's
probably where it got its
that's
name.
That's right. Now, how about gin? Miss Struther.
Gin comes from Geneva. In Switzerland.
Some gin comes from Geneva.
No, but
Geneva
the word gin. Oh, no, it doesn't. It comes from juniper.
You can make the derivation a little clearer if you give me the French for juniper. Mr. Kieran.
Genièvre.
That's right, Genièvre. It also, some people say it comes from the Middle English, Ginepra, which is not a bad piece of Middle English, Mr. Adams, is it? Now that
that's
I throw it directly at you.
That's an elegant piece of Middle English.
That gives us three out of four. Can't seem to stump them tonight.
The cashier's register is not doing very good business.
No, no. We'll have to see if we can get $10 out of you.
Don't trifle with your luck.
Mrs. T. O. Varga of Brooklyn, New York, sends this one in. It's a very interesting question, I think. It's about some famous pairs of lovers. They generally come in pairs. Which one died first, the he or the she of each of these pairs? Get 3 out of 4.
Zip now, goes $10.
Yeah. You don't feel yourself competent, Mr. Adams, on this question? Now, the first pair is Romeo and Juliet. Who died first, he or she? Mr. Kieran.
He died first.
He died first. The circumstances being?
That he thought that she was dead, so he committed suicide, and then she awaked from the coma in which she had been carefully wrapped. And finding him dead, she killed us.
Providing us with the fifth act. Very good. Now, the second pair of lovers, Tristan and Isolde, or often known as Tristan und Isolde. Mr. Bromfield.
Tristan died first, and Isolde threw herself on his body and died of grief immediately afterwards.
Don't laugh, Mr. Bromfield.
I was thinking about the opera singers and how they look.
That's
right.
A horrible thought.
Now, the third pair of lovers, Antony and Cleopatra. Did he or she die first? Miss Struther.
Antony died first.
Why?
Why?
Yes, why?
I guess he was bumped off.
Oh, well, it's very similar to the Romeo and Juliet situation, I think.
Yes,
Mr. Kieran, isn't that the case? Didn't he believe that Cleopatra was dead in the play?
He believes she was, and then she, of course, put the...
Said it right.
Put the asp.
Yes.
On herself. Was stung to death.
That's right. Now, the fourth pair of famous lovers is Frankie and Johnny. He or she die first? Frank, Miss Struther, you don't know anything about Frankie and Johnny.
I certainly do.
Well, you've been improving your time while you're in this country.
Not at all. I've had the Frank Crummett record of that for years.
Oh, have you really? It's a very good record, too. Which died first, Frankie or Johnny?
Oh, now, isn't that awful?
Well,
the man, anyway, and I can't remember which was which.
Ah, that is practically the entire...
Johnny
no,
died.
She didn't. She Big whipped pardon? Out a little 94. Yes.
Johnny died first.
Johnny died first, as Mr. Adams
right.
tells us.
The women always survived in these...
Yes.
Looks I guess that's a slice of life.
Ladies last, don't they? Let's see.
It was Hero and Leander, they forgot all about.
I'm sorry we don't have that on the card, Mr. Brownfield. Well, the first half of our program has come to an end, and we have to admit that we have parted with absolutely nothing so far. Shall we make way for Mr. Milton Cross?
Many years ago, the workers in silver and other precious metals in the Guildhall began marking their articles as proof of their genuineness of excellence. Thus, any evidence of sterling quality or true worth became known as the hallmark. And today we might say that Canada Dry has a hallmark of its own. This hallmark is the silver label on the bottle of sparkling Canada Dry water. This label has fully as much meaning as the hallmarks of the silver workers. It is visible assurance that the club soda contained in the bottle has been prepared by skilled craftsmen. These chemists create sparkling water from a definite formula worked out over a long period of time. That's why you'll never find a club soda to match Canada Dry water in its ability to make your favorite drink taste better and stay lively longer. So next time you buy a club soda, be sure to get the one bearing the Canada Dry hallmark, the silver label that says, a delightful table water, a marvelous mixer, sparkling Canada Dry water.
Mr. Cross, your discourse was clocked in exactly 64 seconds. I'm determined to get $10 out of these people this evening. Mary Humphrey of Detroit, Michigan, sends this one in. Name 3 women of fiction who did the proposing. Who did the proposing. The proposal, I believe, is of marriage. There's nothing on the card to indicate the contrary. Mr. Kieran?
Priscilla Alden.
Priscilla Alden. Who is she? Or was
she? Was the one who spoke up and said, why don't you speak for yourself, John, when John Alden came a-wooing for Miles Standish?
100%. Thank you, Mr. Kieran. That gives us 1 woman of fiction who did the proposing. Have to get 2 more. Mr.
Fiction
Brum?
Makes it harder.
Mr. Bromfield, I'm a little surprised that you can't supply us with 1 or 2.
I never read novels.
Do you read any of your own?
None of my own, even.
Oh, you should read them. They have many merits. In The Rains Came, Mr. Bromfield, is there not a character named Edwina?
Yes.
Does she not do the proposing?
Yes, I believe she does.
Now, Mr. Bromfield, as long as we have you flat on your back, did you not write a novel called Night in Bombay?
Yes.
Did you not have a character named Carol in Night in Bombay? Yes. Does she not do the proposing?
Yes.
Why, Mr. Bromfield?
Where were you on the night of May 4th?
We still have to get two more. I can't supply all these. I believe in Lawrence Houseman's play, immortalized by Helen Hayes, Victoria Regina, does the proposing. Do you remember that, Miss Strella? Did you?
Yes, I think I do now. You mentioned it.
Yes, that's right.
It
and
escaped me.
Scarlett O'Hara in Gone with the Wind, a little book that turned out here a couple of years ago, does the proposing, too. Well, apparently we lose $10 in a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica to Miss Mary Humphrey, who sent in a very good question. And a title. H.R. Butts of Winnetka, Illinois, sends this one in. It's a single-part question. Now, as you all know, the British Navy is called the Royal Navy. The British Air Force is called the Royal Air Force. But the British Army is never called the Royal Army. Why?
I know, but isn't it called...
Mr. Bromfield.
I'm sorry.
It's all right.
Isn't it called His Majesty's Army?
Don't think so. And Mr. Kieran.
Well, the British Navy and the British Air Force is right from the British Isles itself, whereas the British Army is composed in the field of units from all the other colonies.
Yes.
That might be one reason for it.
That's certainly true, but I don't believe that would necessarily be a reason why it may not be called the Royal Army. Well, Miss Strother might be the only one that we might possibly expect to know this. It's a part of English history that I imagine one learns in the English schools. Miss Strother, shall I tell you the reason?
Yes, I'm very sorry. I know I ought to know it.
Oh, not necessarily. A lot of things we don't know about our own history that we should know. Well, in 1689, there was a Bill of Rights imposed by the Lords and Commoners. That was during the reign of William and Mary. And that provided that the King of England could never have an army during peace times without the consent of Parliament. And that custom has continued. The prohibition against calling the British Army the Royal Army has continued even during war times. And every year, solemnly, Parliament reenacts that law. Now, is that
That's
clear?
That's extremely interesting.
It is interesting.
Very gratifying, but I didn't
And know. It will prove even more interesting to Mr. Butts, who gets $10 and a set of Encyclopedia Britannica.
And living in Detroit probably needs it today.
It's very possible.
Oh.
See what you can do with this one. I'm going to ask you to get 3 out of 4 on this. Robert Hardy of Massena, New York, sends this one in. It's about Rebecca. Identify the following heroines of literature. They're all named Rebecca. The first Rebecca was tried for witchcraft. Who was she? The first Rebecca, Mr. Bromfield?
Ivanhoe.
The Rebecca in Ivanhoe by?
Walter Scott.
Yes, we're very precise in this program,
Walter
Mr. Bromfield.
Scott.
Now, the next Rebecca left a legacy of hate. A legacy of hate. Who would that be? Mr. Kieran.
It's the Rebecca in the book called Rebecca.
That's right.
Her husband hated her. Her surviving husband.
Good enough. Who wrote the book?
I read the book.
Miss Du Maurier.
Miss Du Maurier. Thank you, Mr. Adams. Daphne Du Maurier. Now, the third Rebecca was a social climber. Mr. Kieran?
Thackeray.
Well, he wasn't named Rebecca.
No. Becky Sharp.
Becky
Mrs. Sharp. Mrs. Rawdon Crawley.
Yes. You're pretty formal this evening, Mr. Kieran.
Pretty elegant, I suppose.
Just call her Becky. The fourth and last Rebecca was lost in a cave. Was lost in a cave. Mr. Kieran again.
Becky Thatcher.
Becky Thatcher, that's right. In what book?
Well, that's Mark Twain, and I would say this time that it would be Tom Sawyer.
That's right. You usually say Huckleberry Finn, Mr. Kieran, but Tom Sawyer is quite right. Oh, is it you, Mr. Adams, that does that? That gives us 4 Rebeccas out of 4, and sends us on to a question for Mrs. Henry M. Bloom of Chicago, Illinois. Get 2 out of 3 if you can. Who were these famous people who were originally unsuccessful in other fields? In the first case, an unsuccessful drug clerk became a successful poet. Miss Strother.
John Keats.
John Keats, yes. You wouldn't call him a drug clerk in England.
What? We should call him a chemist.
A chemist or an apothecary's assistant.
Apothecary's man.
Apothecary's assistant. Yes. Something of that sort. Thank
exactly.
you, Mr. Adams. Now, in the second case, an unsuccessful storekeeper became a successful statesman. Mr. Bromfield.
Grant?
Well, I wouldn't say that he became a very successful statesman.
No, but not at all.
He became a successful
general.
I put up
my hand, I think of general.
Mr. Lincoln. Mr.
Abraham Lincoln.
That's right. It's just your face, Mr. Adams.
I gave you the hint, though.
Abraham Lincoln is right, but I'm afraid we're going to lose on that because Mr. Bromfield said Grant. Unless we get the next one correct. In this case, the unsuccessful lawyer became a successful biographer. An unsuccessful lawyer became a successful biographer. Miss Strother had her hand up first.
Would it be Boswell?
Yes, Boswell. Mr. Adams, were you going to say Boswell?
I was going to say Boswell.
I'm sure you were. That gives us 2 out of 3. See what you can do with this one. From C. Ralph Huller of Covington, Connecticut. Kentucky, I beg your pardon. Basing your answers on famous quotations, can you tell us what is rather to be chosen than great riches? There are going to be 4 of these. Get 3 out of 4. What is rather to be chosen than great riches, Mr. Adams?
A good name.
A good name. And where would you find that quotation?
You would find that somewhere in the Old Testament. I wouldn't swear where.
No. In the Old Testament is quite right. It is a proverb, and you would find it in what book, Mr. Adams?
Proverb.
You and I work together beautifully, Mr. Adams. Beautifully. What is better than rubies? Mr. Kieran.
A good name is better than rubies, isn't it?
I don't think a good name is better than rubies. Miss Struther?
A good woman, I thought.
Undoubtedly, but I don't believe that's...
Her price is above rubies, isn't it?
Just better than rubies. I don't think that a good woman is the right answer. Now, I may be wrong. I wish I had an Old Testament before me, but the answer is wisdom, apparently. Wisdom is better than rubies. I'm sure that a good woman is better than rubies, too, Miss Struther. What is sharper than a serpent's tooth? Sharper than a... Mr. Kieran, you can't contain yourself. Mr. Kieran?
A thankless child.
Yes.
No.
I beg pardon?
To have a thankless child.
Yes, that's right. And you'll find, Mr. Adams, that quotation where?
King Lear.
Yes, that's right. Source of a great many quotations. And what is better than secret love?
Oh,
very
I don't
few
think
things. What is better than secret love? Well, choose something. Just tell me the first thing that comes to your mind. This also is a proverb from Proverbs, XXVII. Oh. Now, perhaps I give it away to you, Mr. Adams. Open rebuke is better than secret love. Open rebuke is better than secret love, and you find it...
That's quite debatable.
It's in the Bible, Miss Struther. And that gives us, I'm afraid, only 2 out of 4. Unless we can make sure that a good woman is better than rubies, which I'm going to contest just for the moment. That sends $10 instead of the Encyclopedia Britannica to Mr. Huller. What can you do with this one from Miss S.M. Giffen of Yonkers, New York? Give 4 book titles that might serve as sentences a judge might pronounce on a prisoner. I'll give you all possible latitude here. Miss Struther.
3 weeks by Eleanor Glynn.
Yes, 3 weeks. Very wonderful. A short sentence, but a very long seller. That gives us 1. Mr. Kieran.
40 Days of Musa-Dagh.
40 Days of Musa-Dagh by Franz Werfel. That will do very well. That gives us 2. Mr. Adams.
Possession by Louis Bromfield.
Possession... You mean 9 points of
That's
the law?
9 points of the law.
Well, you think that would be a sentence pronounced by a judge?
Possession, yes.
Would he say possession?
He would if he were laconic.
You know, you're giving Bromfield a fearful plug on this program, Mr. Adams. It's been going on for quite a time. Miss Struther.
1,001 Nights.
1,001 Nights. Yes, that would be a very good one.
These are all time sentences.
Well, most sentences are time sentences.
Mr. Kieran's hand's been up a long time.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Kieran.
2 years before the mast.
2 years good. Before the mast? Very good. One might think of a number
20,
of others.
20,000 leagues under the sea.
Life among the lowly, Mr. Or perhaps Live Alone and Like It by Marjorie Hillis might do. Barbara Mathis of Bound Brook, New Jersey sends this one in. Get 2 out of 3 if you can. This is about animals. What animals frequently appear in pictures by the following artists? The first artist is Giorgio Di Chirico. Giorgio Di Chirico. Mr. Brumfield.
Horses.
Horses. Mr. Kieran.
Also lions. He puts lions in his pictures.
He does put lions in his... Does he put lions in his pictures, Mr. Brumfield?
Now and then. I think more horses.
I think more horses than lions, too. But we'll let the lions in, Mr. Kieran. Now, in the next case, Henri-Julien Rousseau. Henri-Julien Rousseau, Mr. Kieran.
Well, he has all sorts of tropical animals. Tiger, for one.
Yes.
Monkeys, sometimes.
Monkeys, that's
as
right.
Mr. Bromfield says.
Oranges, which are not animals.
No, oranges are not.
Pineapples.
Who is or was Rousseau, Mr. Kieran?
He was a customs house tender, what they call a douanier. That's what they call him, Rousseau the douanier, to distinguish him from Théodore Etienne Rousseau, the landscape painter.
You're not even confused at all by the other Rousseau who wrote his own confessions, I suppose.
No, Jean-Jacques, no.
Oh, no. It's wonderful the way you keep your Rousseaus apart. What animal frequently appears in pictures by Thomas A. Dorgan? Thomas A. Dorgan. Mr. Adams.
The human animal.
You're bitter this evening, Mr. Adams. No, I don't think so. Do you remember those old-time comic strips, Mr. Tan?
Well, Thiedink, trained dog, and also hot dogs.
Yes, it seems to me that all the characters by Tad, Mr. Adams, are dogs, aren't they? It's a tribute to Tad's genius that you think they're human beings.
Well,
Mr. Bromfield?
No, I was going to say they look more like human beings than dogs.
Yes, than dogs do. Well, now we may have time for one more. Let's see. How are these pairs of words and phrases connected in their original meanings? This comes from Miss Frances Taniguchi of Oakland. Fool and pair of bellows. How would they be connected in their original meaning? Fool and pair of bellows. Mr. Kieran.
Well, fool from the blowing of the wind in through them, you mean? From the word flautus?
No, the word is follis, I believe. Bellows, Latin meaning bellows, and bellows is a windbag, and windbag is a fool. I think you are very near to it. How about arrive and bank of a river? How are they connected? Mr. Brumfield.
It comes from French. It's arriver, which means to get on.
That's right. I'm afraid we'll have to. You've got it, but I'm afraid I'll have to interrupt you, Mr. Brumfield, and turn the rest of the evening over to Mr. Cross.
The first brisk days of fall mark the return of interest in the bridge table, renewed activity in the book clubs, and social plans that had stagnated in the summer heat begin to take shape again. In other words, we call it the start of the social season. Now, on these occasions of social activities, whether it be simply a bridge game or a debutante ball, Canada Dry Ginger Ale will help make your entertaining efforts more successful. For Canada Dry has a distinctive flavor that's different, a flavor created by the careful blending of finest Jamaica ginger, selected imported spices, pure sugar, and other choice ingredients under a formula that's never been closely duplicated. And it's this distinctive flavor and aroma that's made Canada Dry a welcome guest on any occasion, has made it famous as the champagne of ginger ales.
A quick accounting with the accounting department reveals that we've lost a total of $30 and 3 sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Miss Struther, thank you for coming back again tonight, and thank you, Mr. Bromfield, for your first appearance. Next week, Information Please presents the old gang, Levant, Adams, and Kieran, with the author of The Triumph of American Capitalism, Mr. Louis Hacker, as our special guest star. Remember, for every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $5. And if your question stumps our experts, you not only get $10 more, but in addition, a complete 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Remember, send your letters with questions and the correct answers to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City.
Among the host of Canada Dry beverages, you are bound to enjoy these favorites: Canada Dry Tom Collins Mixer and Canada Dry Lime Ricky, both made with genuine fruit base and the finest ingredients. No preservatives or artificial flavoring. So for delicious, cooling, tall drinks, insist on Canada Dry's Tom Collins Mixer and Canada Dry Lime Ricky. The family size costs only 15 cents, plus bottle deposit. This is Milton Cross saying goodnight for Canada Dry until next week at this same time.